Dhritarashtra quits home. Text 60. Yudhishthira,
Yudhishthira
labdha,
labdha
rajya, drishtva pautra kulan dara bratribir loka palapair mumude paraya shriya Yudhishthira labdha rajyo Drishtrapotram kulandaram Mratribhya loka palabhair Mumude paraya shriya Yudhishthira labdha rajyo Drishtrapotram kulandaram Mratribhya loka palabhair Mumude paraya shriya Yudhishthira labdha rajyo Drishtrapotram kulandaram Mratribhya loka palabhair Mumude paraya shriya Yudhishthira labdha rajya, possessing his paternal kingdom. Drishtva, by seeing, Pautra, the grandson, Kulam Dharam, just suitable for the dynasty. Bratribhi,
by the brothers,
Lokapalabhai, who were all expert administrators. Momode, enjoyed life, Paraya, uncommon. Shriya, opulence. Translation. Having won his kingdom and observed the birth of one grandson competent to continue the noble tradition of his family, Maharaj Yudhishthira reigned peacefully and enjoyed uncommon opulence in cooperation with his younger brothers, who were all expert administrators to the common people. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Both Maharaj Yudhishthira and Arjuna were unhappy from the beginning of the Battle of Kurukshetra, but even though they were unwilling to kill their own men in the fight, it had to be done as a matter of duty, for it was planned by the supreme will of Lord Sri Krishna. After the battle, Maharaj Yudhishthira was unhappy over such mass killings. Practically, there was none to continue the Kuru dynasty after them, the Pandavas. The only remaining hope was the child in the womb of his daughter-in-law, Uttara. And he was also attacked by Ashvatthama, but by the grace of the Lord, the child was saved. So, after the settlement of all disturbing conditions and re-establishment of the peaceful order of the state, and after seeing the surviving child Parikshit well satisfied, Maharaj Yudhishthira felt some relief as a human being, although he had very little attraction for material happiness, which is always illusory and temporary. Yudhishthira labdha rajyo drishtva pautram kulandaram bratribhya lokapalabhair mumude paraya shriya. having won his kingdom and observed the birth of one grandson competent to continue the noble tradition of his family, Maharaj Yudhisthira reigned peacefully and enjoyed uncommon opulence in cooperation with his younger brothers, who were all expert administrators to the common people. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vastritya Dejitarne Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpaturubhyas chakripa sindubhyevacha paditanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Yes, so of course we're very familiar with the earlier chapters, couple of chapters of Bhagavad Gita, and we're well aware of how distraught Arjuna was being confronted with that situation on the battlefield of Kurukshetra just as the battle was about to begin. That is practically certainly one of the most well-known aspects and features of Krishna consciousness, how the Bhagavad Gita begins, what is the mood of Arjuna, how Lord Krishna addressed that mood. Such a prominent and very important part of all of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada mentions here in the purport that not only was Arjuna not happy right at that point at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, but similarly his brother Maharaj Yudhisthira, who was the leader of their side, he was also extremely unhappy, and he may not have reacted, or it may not be recorded so much like Arjuna, his, you could say, outburst at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, but certainly Maharaj Yudhisthira was not happy that we're going to fight, so many people are going to be killed. It's certainly not something to celebrate. But yes, certainly as a devotee, as a soft-hearted person, Maharaj Yudhisthira was also not pleased with the prospect of this great, great battle, and surely so many people would die. Prabhupada refers to it as mass killings. Even Srila Prabhupada points out in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in one of the purports, that Arjuna, even though Lord Krishna frowns on Arjuna's reaction of not wanting to fight, etc., but Srila Prabhupada makes the point in one of the purports that in one sense Arjuna's reaction of concern that so many people may die, and just so we can get a kingdom, and these types of considerations, Prabhupada makes the point that in one sense, this is the natural reaction of a devotee, a soft-hearted devotee. Krishna, of course, doesn't appreciate it under the circumstances, but in general, devotees are soft-hearted, kind-hearted, and they would never like to see that for their sake, other people are inconvenienced and, what to speak of, killed. We know, for example, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the description of Sanatana Goswami when he went down to join Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri initially, that he was so much in a rush to get down there as quickly as possible and be able to associate with the Lord, and he was just, nothing would get in his way. He was practically running all day, every day, just to get down and join Lord Chaitanya. As a result, he was not so careful sometimes about what he would eat, where he would bathe, and the quality of certain of these things he'd come in contact with. As a result, he developed a skin condition, some very unpleasant skin disease due to some contact with dirty water and like that. And it was a very serious skin condition. In fact, it became so extremely serious that there were open wounds on his body, and even some worms and other little creatures entered some of those wounds. Really, most extremely unpleasant. But Sanatana Goswami, sometimes a worm would fall off, and out of his compassion and concern for all living entities, including that worm, he would put the worm back. It's inconceivable. But the devotees, as devotees progress in Krishna consciousness, they naturally become more and more concerned, interested, concerned, and sensitive to the well-being of other living beings. As we've mentioned on a number of occasions, I was personally present when Srila Prabhupada was asked by the temple president of one temple in England. The devotee said, "We have it was in a Bhagavad Gita class. Many devotees were present. The devotee, the temple president from Edinburgh, said, "Srila Prabhupada, we have a very old building, some perhaps 300 years old, and there are many rats, and rats are dangerous. So Srila Prabhupada, is it all right if we kill the rats?" And Srila Prabhupada's answer was, "If you kill the rats, you should be killed." And, you know, as we have explained before, the devotee didn't quite catch it, and he asked Srila Prabhupada again with a sort of slightly more nuanced type of presentation of the question. And Prabhupada just simply gave the same answer, that if you kill the rats, you should be killed. So, as devotees progress in Krishna consciousness, they certainly become more and more sensitive to the well-being of other living entities, even to the point of their so-called enemies, or those who are like severely antagonistic towards them, aggressively antagonistic. So Arjuna, at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, of course, as we know very well, Lord Krishna did not appreciate his sentiments, and indeed he spoke very strongly against them. in favor of actually fighting against those people. And indeed, that's what happened. The battle took place. But still, Prabhupada makes that point in one of the purports that in a sense we can appreciate Arjuna's feelings because a devotee is naturally very soft-hearted. So, but as a duty, because he knew it is actually the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who was personally directing him, and so there was no need to speculate, is it the will of the Lord or maybe not or what? Krishna was personally there directing him, so it was very clear. And therefore, as a matter of duty, he and Yudhisthira, who was also apparently feeling some similar sort of emotions, they fought. And they really fought. And against great odds, actually. In military terms, their side was much smaller, and it was simply just hand-to-hand, face-to-face combat. No sort of subtle tactics, at least not very much. But despite the odds, they won. Because they accepted the order of the Lord, despite their feelings. Then, again, interestingly enough, in I think it's the 9th chapter of this first canto, after the battle has been completed, and Yudhisthira, Arjuna, and their army have won, and Maharaj Yudhisthira is about to be installed as the king, so Maharaj Yudhisthira again becomes very disturbed afterwards that so many people have died, millions actually, many millions have died just for me, just so I could become the king. What am I going to do? How am I going to deal with the karmic reactions? And then he was instructed by Bhishma Dev. And as Arjuna was brought to his senses by the instructions of Krishna on the battlefield, so afterwards, by the instructions of Bhishma Dev, Maharaj Yudhisthira was also sobered, and he became clear-headed, and he understood what to do. So anyway, these were the situations, and it's very interesting how the different factors are dealt with in suitable ways, despite there being very strong feelings in this way, that way, other ways, conflicting ways. But Krishna consciousness is such a thing that if it's understood sufficiently, then even all sorts of conflicting opinions, ideas, conceptions can be balanced. Yes. I'll give you one interesting little example. We have mentioned this before. Interesting little example. Two devotees, I mentioned it actually a few months ago. Two devotees, Madhu Devisa Prabhu and Mother Yamuna, were having a discussion come argument about Krishna and Balaram. And Madhudvisa Prabhu was saying, Krishna and Balaram are the same. They're just equal. There's a difference in color, but it doesn't matter. They're just equal. And Mother Yamuna was saying that actually they're not equal, because Krishna is the only enjoyer of Srimati Radharani. So there's this sort of verbal conflict to some degree. And Prabhupada's secretary, Tamal Krishna Goswami, brought it to Srila Prabhupada, and he explained, they were all there, and Tamal Krishna Goswami explained the situation to Prabhupada, that Madhu Dvisa Prabhu, yes, he says that Krishna and Balaram are just equal. They're just the same. There's a difference in color, but it doesn't make any difference. They're the same. Prabhupada said he's right. And then Tamal Krishna Goswami said, but Mother Yamuna says they're not equal, because Krishna is the only enjoyer of Srimati Radharani. And Prabhupada said, she's right. And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, but Prabhupada, they can't both be right. And Prabhupada said, you're right. And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, but Prabhupada, how can we understand this? And Prabhupada said, you decide. In other words, certain transcendental things, you can look at it this way, you can look at it that way, and not in all cases, but in certain cases. And it doesn't really matter, you can be right both ways. So through Krishna consciousness, unresolvable problems can be resolved, or in some cases where they may not be resolved, the two perspectives can be accepted, which is a type of resolution. Yes, that's the transcendental nature of Krishna consciousness. That on one hand, Arjuna is a compassionate devotee, and that's important. On the other hand, he should fight, and he did. As a matter of duty, because it was the supreme will of Lord Sri Krishna, not whimsically. And he, of course, was in that just extremely favorable situation, favorable to say the least, that he could actually ask Krishna, and Krishna could actually give a direct answer. In our cases, we have to be more careful. We may just think, well, how am I going to understand this? I know. I'll ask Anantashesh, and whatever he says, will accept. But who knows? It may not be the same as asking Krishna. Yes. So, then Maharaj Yudhisthira had been very concerned about the continuation of the line for ruling the people, because without good leadership, even good people who are very good individually themselves, but without good leadership, they may not be able to work cohesively, and they may not be able to deal with many situations. Good leadership is an extremely important part of life in general. So therefore, without a good king, qualified king, even a community of very nice people, with qualified Brahmins and so on like that. But there's not actually a good ruling head. Even a nice situation like that can get into great difficulty. We see later on in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there was a king called Vena who was extremely strong in terms of maintaining law and order. Extremely, like, ruthlessly strong. So while he was ruling, there was practically no crime. People could leave their front doors open and go out for the weekend or something like that and be confident nothing would be interfered with at all, because Vena was so extremely ruthlessly strong in dealing with any type of crime. But on the other hand, Vena, unfortunately, he had some personality defects. He was not a devotee, to put it mildly. And he had a very twisted type of mind, actually. And he would abuse people. And he would not, for example, he would not allow any God consciousness, but he insisted that people worship him. So there were pluses and there were minuses. But the pluses were pluses. Sometimes with people, you know, people tend to have pluses and minuses in their persons. And sometimes if the minuses become a bit more prominent, then we may be prone to overlook the pluses. This is, you know, I would say it's actually very common. But Vena, he was rigidly against crime and anything of that sort, and that was good. But he was so atheistic and completely sort of crazy in other respects that the Brahmins, they cursed him to die, and he died just by their curse. Bhagavatam says they killed him with sharp words. However, when he was gone, and of course you can imagine many people celebrating that, you know, this despot, hopelessly abusive person is gone, very nice. But what happened was that when he was gone, the criminal elements rose up and just terrorized the population. And therefore the Brahmins understood, we have to do something. And as a result, Maharaj Prithu was produced. And he took control of the situation. So the thing is that without strong leadership, there's a tendency for the weakness of those who should be being properly led, there's a tendency for the weakness of the weaknesses of the followers to come up and then create serious problems. So therefore, good leadership in Krishna consciousness, good leadership, strong leadership is extremely important. Even if there's some shortcomings, there'll always be some shortcomings. So Maharaj Yudhisthira was very concerned because the five Pandavas who had one wife, their sons were killed. Their sons were killed. There was just one grandchild who was still in the womb of his mother. And Maharaj Yudhisthira and Ashwatthama, at the end, after just shortly after the end of the battle, Ashwatthama, one of the bad guys, he wanted to kill that child, and he tried to kill the child in the womb of the mother, but Krishna saved the child, Maharaj Parikshit, and Parikshit was born. And now here we are, we're some time after all of this. Parikshit is now growing up and showing himself to really be a very qualified person for taking over the leadership of the society, of the whole planet, in fact. Yes. So, as the verse says, and Prabhupada points out, Maharaj Yudhisthira, as a result of this, all the different problems having been settled, you know, Duryodhana being disposed of, and the various other problems being dealt with and finished, and now there being a suitable heir to the throne, Maharaj Parikshit, Maharaj Yudhisthira felt that everything is secure, I can relax a bit. And this is what's said. Maharaj Yudhisthira reigned peacefully and enjoyed uncommon opulence. Yes, Prabhupada says Maharaj Parikshit, Maharaj Yudhisthira felt some relief as a human being. Although he had very little attraction for material happiness, which is always illusory and temporary. You know, sometimes in the Krishna consciousness movement, it happens that we face some problems. But, you know, in the great majority of cases, maybe every time, but in so many cases, after some serious endeavor, the problems are surmounted. This we've seen. So the tendency, the material tendency is to think the problems have been overcome. We can relax now. Let me take rest. But as Prabhupada says here, even though Maharaj Yudhisthira felt some relief as a human being, but really he had very little attraction to just material relaxation, material comfort, because as a great devotee he understood clearly, it's all illusory and temporary. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he is well known for having said that, at least in financial terms, he said, it is always good if devotees are at least in a little debt. It's good. Because if there's a little debt financially, or if there's some difficulty dealing with this, dealing with that in some other respect, if there's some challenges of some significance, then the devotees will not become complacent. Complacency, laziness, apathy is one of the great enemies of Krishna consciousness. But for a person in material consciousness, overcoming problems and then relaxing, feeling that the problems are overcome, everything is fine. This is just a very typical feature of material consciousness. So So therefore Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, it's always good for the devotees if there's a little debt, some challenges, some problems to deal with, so they won't become apathetic. Okay, Krishna, you can solve the problems. I will take rest, and please wake me up when the problems are solved, so I can take prasadam happily. So, Prabhupada was almost relentless in how he applied pressure to his disciples. You know, like for example, after a Christmas book distribution marathon, when the devotees distributed many books with great endeavor, great effort, and really felt at the end like, that was really quite something. When Prabhupada heard the result, Prabhupada said, very good, very nice, thank you. Now double it. This was Prabhupada. Or when the devotees did the marathon to complete Chaitanya Charitamrita in 2 months, they brought the final Prabhupada, they were doing it all in America, they brought the final copy of the final book in the set to Prabhupada, who was in Vrindavan. A devotee flew specifically just to give him a copy of the last volume. And the devotee arrived and gave the book to Prabhupada exactly two months plus 1 day after Prabhupada had given the order, 2 months. So Prabhupada took the book and it was very happy. And Prabhupada said, you are 1 day late. So, some pressure in devotional service. Not to the point where where real over-endeavor is sort of encouraged or required, but at least serious, focused endeavor with a little bit of pressure to keep going and not become lazy. This is an important part of Krishna consciousness. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, he felt some relief. Our enemies are all gone. Our succession plan is there. Parikshit is there. He's qualified. Okay. I can relax a bit. Although he understood life is not for relaxation. Life is for service. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question? Bhakti Nrisingha Maharaj, some words of wisdom. Oh yes, Mother Sarvakanti, some words of wisdom.
Prabhupada once mentioned that those who are lazy and want to sleep all the time, they can come to Mayapur. And then even in the West, the lazies and crazies, they used to send them to New Vrindavan.
You know, it's just a Krishna conscious way of getting rid of people. Any comment? Srila Prabhupada ki.